I used to love my morning coffee, until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics that's gentle on my stomach and gives me smooth, steady energy. Right now, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
The opinions expressed on this webmasterradio.fm program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of webmasterradio.fm. Any rebroadcast or retransmission of this program without the express written consent of webmasterradio.fm is prohibited.
Welcome to Webcology. Webcology is the show that takes you into the deepest and darkest ends of the ecosystem on the internet. Our guides will take you on a journey into web marketing and bring you the experts and the information so that you can further explore the web marketing world. Now, here are the hosts of Webcology, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome to Webcology here on June the 9th, 2011. Thursday, June 9th, 2011. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO. You listen to Webcology on webmasterradio.fm, and we have a hell of a long, busy, complicated show for you today. Coming up in our first segment, we're going to be talking hacking. And, I mean, tis the season. Everyone's getting hacked these days. You know what? You know what I've heard, Dave?
What's that, Jim?
Hacked, you just haven't lived yet. That's what I've been hearing.
Well, there's nothing like that cold fear crossing your heart as you realize that hundreds of thousands of your clients have just been, put out to dry.
Well, that's if your name is Citigroup, Sony, or Nintendo. But you know what? Our guests today, Jonathan Hoffman and Jonas Stein, they may have a solution for webmasters who are concerned about nefarious activities happening in the background around their computers. Their solution is called CodeGuard, and we'll be talking to them for the first segment. In our second segment today, yes, it gets really complicated. We have Shelley Palmer, host of NBC Universal's weekly show Live Digital, also a host of Media Bytes, daily syndicated radio segment on Fox 5, WNYW in New York. He's going to be coming in to talk about Facebook's facial recognition technology, what it means to you as a Facebook user, and you know what you could do about it if you have concerns about, your privacy on Facebook, why ever you might have concerns about that, I don't know. But if you do, Shelley's the fellow to listen to. He's coming up at the end of our show. But we have a couple minutes to, you know, sort of screw around, talk about news, see what's going on in the world. Dave, what have you seen out there this week?
One that I just crossed my path this morning, well, the news went up on WebPro News this morning, that I just found kind of stupid. I'm a small business guy, so I look at things from a small business and look at taxes and government from a small business perspective on things. Protesters have been hitting up Apple, who's making our show periodically these days, because Apple's lobbying for tax cuts for companies that sell outside of the United States. A bunch of protesters went, called that, there's actually a big banner that you can see from that's from there called iTax Cheat, actually kind of witty. But it's funny, I love tax cuts, obviously. And the thing is what I see from this sort of short-sighted nature of this, and you may disagree, is really, I think what Apple's requesting to me, is almost an entirely legitimate thing. Now, I put it in context of probably yourself, myself, and look at what we're doing. While I'm physically located in Canada, a lot of our clients are in the States. So really, what does this do for my taxation and for the economy that I pay taxes into, is really it's drawing revenue in. I have employees, I pay them, then they get taxed. So I think for Apple to be requesting that there be some kind of tax cut for them because their goods and services are selling outside of the United States, is almost an entirely legitimate thing, because what they're doing is pulling money into the U.S. economy, where it's then being redistributed. I think the only point that they may have for them, and I didn't see anything about this being their main point, would be if the manufacturing, you know, maybe if you manufacture here, you can have tax cuts and things like that to generate more jobs. But I found that really, really odd. It was one of the well, we're getting into the biggest news stories of the day, but we'll be doing that with our guests. But to me, when this crossed my eyeballs, that became sort of it was one of the bigger ones, because this is going to impact a lot of the other companies that we know about, and a lot of the other companies that we monitor and do business with. So what Apple does here is really going to set the tone as we head forward, and as some of the other major corporations, you know, we can all think of them, Facebook, Google, et cetera, as they all head forward. I think this is going to set the tone for them. So I'm going to be watching this one really, really carefully. And I think if Apple does win out in this one, and it really is becoming more of a PR issue more than just the straight lobbying that I think that they were expecting it to be earlier, I think we'll start to see a lot more movement among some of the bigger corporations, you know, to make sure, and depending on just exactly how that legislation, exactly how those tax cuts get worded, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. Because if they do focus it more on, hey, you need to actually manufacture here, you need to create jobs here, but yeah, we'll give you a tax cut if you do, I think that could be an absolutely fantastic thing. Despite the protesting, long term, it could be a fantastic thing for the U.S. economy. So I'm in a weird way hoping Apple wins.
For some reason, that reminds me of the affiliate marketing taxation debate. You know, where say you're in New Jersey, you're a webmaster based in New Jersey, you're an affiliate marketer, and the networks that you're marketing through are being asked to pay state taxes on all sales made through your account or any account of other webmasters, say in New Jersey or California or Colorado or anywhere else where the affiliate marketing tax has either been imposed or has been, you know, the legislature has tried to impose it. It's a jurisdictional nightmare. That's one of the things about the internet. It's very difficult to, you know, tax revenues over the web, given that it's an international vehicle. It's not like you have a storefront location that is at, like, you know, First and Main in a specific state under a specific tax regime. And it's coming from Canada, looking at the American, the Byzantine American tax system. I'd say if Apple does get the tax break, that should have an impact on affiliate taxation measures, and on the lobby put forth by the Performance Marketing Association against affiliate taxation. That one's pretty neat. That one does bear watching. You know what? We got time for one more story. And I want to make an announcement that Matt Cutts made at SMX in Seattle this week. As if you haven't had enough pandas in your diet this year. Panda 2.2 is about to be released. And apparently this works in with the rel equals author tag that we heard about a couple days ago coming out of Seattle. Did you hear about rel equals author?
I heard some, and I like the principle of it, but I haven't played with it, obviously, at this stage. So the core of it, it's funny, because it seems to just make a more specific form of the canonical tag. I mean, in its simplest form, how we would use it as it relates to Panda. So, but you may know more details on all of this. So, educate us.
Okay, I'm sorry. Just typing to our guest Jonathan that Brasco will find him. So, Jonathan, if you're listening, hang tight. Brasco will find you. Rel equals author is a new tag that Google's introduced to give attribution to the original writer of a piece. The way it works, and it's domain specific, so we'll use your blog as an example, Dave, the Beanstalk SEO blog. say you write something to the Beanstalk SEO blog, and you have your own bio also on your Beanstalk SEO site. You would put the rel equals author and then a link to the site inside the rel equals author tag, a link to your bio on your page. Now, as you and I know, there are scraper bots out there that are going to come and steal that information off you 15 seconds after you post it. And there's also legitimate websites that want to repost the article, the material that you've written, because it's worthy material. Problem is, you don't get attribution for that as an author.
Right.
The website or the scraper who took your content, they get all the juice, they get all the glory, they get all the attribution. And more importantly, when a search is done either for that piece or for you, the author, they may come up and they may outrank you, even though you're the one who did all the work on it in the first place. And you might hear the frustration in my voice because I hate scrapers. Man, they when I was writing like 2 or 3 major articles a week, those people were ripping me off, and I was so pissed. Anyway, the rel equal author tag, way cool. I'm glad to see it's there. And Panda 2, which is what I really want to talk about, is going to be putting a lot more emphasis on fresh, creative content. So all you content writers out there in Radio Land, champagne's on me, friends, because it's gonna be a good time to be a content writer.
And that you are.
That I am. Oh my goodness, am I ever, dude? I've been doing a lot of content writing the last couple of weeks. One of the reasons I've been keeping my head down and keeping myself off of Facebook and off of Twitter is I've been like really busy. And I gotta tell you, I'm loving Panda. I'm really, really loving Panda. As are my clients.
You know, it leads me to a few questions, but I know we are super, super tight for time. Yeah. So I think you and I next week may be having a bit of a special show because we're both going to be at SES Toronto through next week. So we may do a bit of a special show, and I am going to make sure I'm going to ask these questions to you. So I'm going to do a little interview with Jim on content and Panda 2.2 and how these things tie together. I'm going to be speaking on a panel on Panda, so I think it's very, very timely.
Panel, yeah.
I think this is going to be
black and white on that panel.
Hey, maybe we'll turn it into a black versus white hat. I think it's going to be absolutely
fantastic. Last session, black hat versus white hat. Last session, I'm co-hosting it with Mike Rehan.
And always a fantastic session.
Will be fun.
But we should probably go right. We've got a packed show here, unless there's something you need to cover here first, or maybe take us out.
The only thing I need to say right now is, friends, you're listening to WebCology on WebmasterRadio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beatstalk SEO. Stay tuned. We got a fun show. We're coming back with Jonas Stein and Jonathan Hawkman from CodeGuard. And later on, we're going to be talking with Shelley Percy from, let me just recall this gentleman's information. I'm sorry, Shelley Palmer from Fox 5, WNYW in New York. Stay tuned. WebCology is back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology will be back after this short break. Do you look at the task of ranking your site at the top of the search engines like you would climbing the top of Mount Everest? It doesn't have to be. TopSEOs.com knows how hard that climb can be, and they can make top ranking a reality. TopSEOs sends you to only the right search vendors and agencies that they know will work for you. Since 2002, TopSEOs.com has reviewed and researched the best search engine marketing agencies and solutions providers. Don't risk the cost of falling off the proverbial peak of search rankings. Let TopSEOs give you peace of mind. TopSEOs.com, the independent authority on search vendors.
Oh yeah, my day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brad Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO, and we're joined by two really well-known fellows in the search marketing community, Jonathan Hoffman on the East Coast, and Jonah Stein on the West Coast. Jonah, actually, you're still in Seattle at the SMX conference, eh?
Yeah, well, I'm sticking around for the extra day for Facebook with Marty Weintraub, so.
Oh, man, that would be... Marty goes a mile a minute and lights up any room he speaks in, so that would be amazing. Jonathan, you're out there, I think, in New York City or in Connecticut?
Yeah, I'm in the New York City area in Connecticut.
Okay. Well, Jonathan and Johan, I was going to read bios for both of you, but as it turns out, we have a slightly tighter packed show than expected, so I just want to jump right in. You guys are the authors, the creators, of the software called CodeGuard. CodeGuard protects against hacking and protects your code by, as you're going to explain in a few moments, how it does it. But before we jump in, Sony, Citibank, Nintendo... Who hasn't been hacked this week? And why is such an uptick in hacking activity? I left out Apple. Well, I was afraid of getting sued. why is there such an uptick in hacking activity right now?
Well, I don't think it's actually... I mean, the stories that hit the news, the mainstream, the Fortune 100s that get hacked, those come in spurts. But if you actually look at the majority of hacking activity... never hits the news, and it's the hundreds of thousands of small websites and SMBs and blogs that get taken over every month to insert some poisonous links or to send you to a pharma site or drop some malware on your site, and those then are the vectors that the hackers use, just so when something is trending in news, they can then throw their malware up on a story that they can drop into a news site onto a domain that they've already taken over. And, hit 100,000 people who are clicking through to find out the latest on some other story.
Incredible. And so that often that's the payoff. Well, what about groups like Anonymous or LULZ, Luz? They're not in it for commercial gain, are they?
Commercial gain, probably not. Some ego, some political retribution, I guess. But, again, the thing I want to emphasize is that the people who go after high-profile targets are playing a game with full-time IT people. And it's tragedy and they do a lot of damage. But the real victims, if you ask me, are the businesses who don't have a clue how they're, what they're supposed to do here. And, the bottom line is that if Sony can't protect themselves against being hacked and Citibank and Lockheed Martin can't protect themselves, that the average small business owner, if somebody wants to hack them, they're going to. I mean, there's no way to really stop it. What Jonathan and I realized about a little more than a year ago, is that the one thing you could do is you could help the businesses know they've been hacked and make sure that it's relatively painless to get their site back online and, getting traffic again.
Well, according to the history of CodeGuard, you and Jonah Stein and Jonathan Hoffman met at Google's headquarters in Mountain View in 2008, I'm guessing at a Google party. A few months later, Jonah was organizing a panel at the O'Reilly Media Web 2.0 Summit, and you were talking about, the dangers of hacking, malware, advertising scams, etc. You had Jonathan on the panel. And you guys, after the panel finished, you guys, started talking about integrity monitoring. And that was the genesis of your new software, CodeGuard. Jonathan, could you tell us a little bit about CodeGuard, what it does, and why it does it?
Sure. I spent about 5 years studying Wikipedia because I find it totally fascinating that there's this website that anybody can edit. And actually, if you think about it, you know, the website anybody can edit also describes pretty well your typical small to medium-sized business website, because from the perspective of a hacker, they can edit any small website they want to. It's not very hard to go and hack 10,000 sites if they want to, or 100,000, you know, 1.5 million sites a quarter or a month are being hacked. You know, it's terrible. What we understood from Wikipedia is that to really guard a resource, you can't say we're going to totally prevent people from getting in, because that just doesn't work. Instead, you have to say, what do you do if someone makes a bad edit to the website? How do you control that? So some of the features that Wikipedia has, like revision history, where you have transparency and you can see what changes have been made, and a watch list where you can monitor and see what pages are being changed, these features are included in CodeGuard, so that now the typical webmaster has the same sort of defense for their site that Wikipedia has. Even if someone comes in and hacks it, they're going to be notified immediately, and they're going to have an option to put back a good version of their site. So it's the equivalent of the problem of graffiti. You know, one of the great strategies for dealing with graffiti is that you just paint over it right away, because people who spray graffiti are going to be deterred from doing that if their stuff doesn't last, if it can't persist. So that's really the strategy of CodeGuard, to say that you may get hacked, but you're going to be able to get rid of it.
Okay, so you have a rollback feature. How does that work exactly? Like, I put up fresh content at 9:05 in the morning, because I'm a very fast writer, and 15 minutes later, I've been hacked. How do I roll back to my the content that I swayed so hard over for 5 minutes?
So the answer to that is, if you with CodeGuard, there's really two modes to operate in. In the staging mode, you can upload your changes to CodeGuard, and CodeGuard then pushes them to your site. And when you work in that mode, every single change gets recorded. You can also operate in a automatic backup mode, where you just push your changes directly to the site, and then CodeGuard comes along every hour or every 24 hours and backs up whatever changes have been made. So in your example, if you've made a change and get hacked 15 minutes later, unless CodeGuard backed it up since that change was made, it's not going to be in the backup yet. But typically,
no, but I'm not going to lose much.
You're not going to lose much. You'd only lose very little, and you probably still have that material on your local computer. Right?
Well, one would hope. But this is me we're talking about, so probably not.
Well...
luck of the Northern Irish, bro. Luck of the Northern Irish.
Yeah, I mean, in the use case where it's content that you just created, it's not impossible that CodeGuard's going to help you, but we're less likely to be able to step in unless you are using it in the push mode, which is the more professional mode. But much more common than that, is that the hack occurs and you don't even know your site's been hacked for a couple of days, because you don't. Immediately find out until somebody starts telling you that you're redirecting them to that Canadian pharmacy site for Viagra, or wondering why you're suddenly linking to all those online casinos in some of your posts, or you have to do a vanity search and you see that Google's decided your site contains content that might corrupt the browser, and they intercept you on your way there. So, we're really designed that you'll have the ability to undo that damage. Or, alternatively, there are some people out there who have developers who've been known to FTP right into a site to make a quick change because they're, kind of confident that they know what they're doing. And after they've broken your site and brought it to its knees and can't find that CSS and, screwed up the HT access, you can't even get back into the site. You can also rescue yourself just by logging in and hitting the undo button on CodeGuard.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, that innocuous mistakes are probably 10 times more common than hacking, even though hacking is still very common. The you made a mistake in editing your website and broke it, and you want to get it back quickly. That's a big use case.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the company itself and the software itself, CodeGuard. According to the Code Guard website, the genesis of the plan was 2008. I imagine it was 2009 when you guys actually sat down and started really thinking about it. How's your experience been bringing a new product to this market?
Let's just say that, like any development process, you never would have imagined each step was going to take as long as it was. Also, like any development process, things that seem relatively simple, as you start to unravel the decision tree, you find an incredible amount of nuance and complexity. At its heart, the idea behind CodeGuard was to take a industry standard version control system and turn it into software as a service. And you can say that in one sentence, but it turns out to be quite an interesting process to get it all the way to the point that that we can turn it out to our friends and say, go try this.
Jonathan, do you have anything to add to that?
The developer who put together our prototype, the first thing I did with it after he said it was done and it was ready is I tried it out on his wife's website, and we managed to delete and lose a bunch of files. And he had this terrible, terrible look on his face. And it was just one of those moments, And so we put the site back together, but there's just been a lot of testing, just a lot of testing and time to make sure everything works correctly. Because to have something and turn it into a product which other people can use just takes immensely more work than building a utility that you're going to use yourself.
Well, undoubtedly. But apparently the time and the effort you guys have put in has been worth it. I'm looking at the press pages on your CodeGuard.com website right now. On the 24th of May, TechCrunch wrote that CodeGuard was the winner of the Audience Award at the TechCrunch Disrupt Conference in New York. They called CodeGuard a simple time machine for your website. A couple days later, on the 2nd of June, Tech Journal South, covered you, Atlanta-based CodeGuard, teased an angel round for website protection. You raised $500,000. It was announced, on June 3rd that you got another $500,000 from Imlay Investments. So clearly you guys are getting some attention. And, I guess now you have the VCs in. How's that changed your life at all? Or has that changed your life? Now you're not just working for yourselves, you're working for investors.
Well, it's interesting because we don't get to have things our own way anymore. And so we have to convince other people that what we're doing is right. But really, it's been great because we have an excellent CEO now who is driving things forward. He's been talking with hosting providers, and they really love the product because one of the banes of their existence is support costs. When the customer's website gets hacked or they screw it up, the customer calls a hosting provider, and that's a big expense to provide that support. So they really love the product, and the customers want the product. So it's really just taking off now. The publicity from TechCrunch Disrupt was so helpful in launching this. And we have a beta system which is going to be good for up to 5,000 users. We probably are going to fill that up relatively soon. So I would definitely encourage anyone who would like an account to go in and get one now. It's free and you can try it out. Because they just go to the site and sign up. And if you go there, if you need to have some sort of referral code. Do you want a referral code, Jim, to give out to your listeners?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We add value every day. That's our job.
All right. So let me see if I can just generate a code for you on the fly. Every user actually has they're able to give a code to their friends. So what code do you want, Jim? What should your code be?
Webcology.
Web? How do you spell it?
Webcology.
Webcology. Okay, and this code is good. So it's all lowercase, Webcology.
There you got it, friends. Go to CodeGuard.com. Use Webcology as your key. And what will happen for them if they do?
They'll be able to back up a site up to a quarter gigabyte, which is large enough for most reasonable size WordPress installations. And that will take a backup for them, and it will keep checking their site. It will notify them if anything on the site has changed. It tells them what's changed so that they can look down the list of files and say, yeah, I edited that file. That's good. Oh, wait, I didn't touch that. What happened here? And if they need to, they can download a zip file containing their source code and reinstall it. With the upgraded versions, the paid versions, there are some additional features available. Probably the user can do very well with just the free version because that protects them from the major catastrophe. And if we hope they find value in it, and we hope that some of them will upgrade to the paid versions.
Okay, I'm sorry, jump in.
Oh, I was just going to say, if there happen to be some developers or consultants or designers out there that have a portfolio of clients, once they've joined the system, we'd be happy to give some upgrades so they can try out some of the pro features, because we're still getting feedback on those as well. And at this point, we really want to get people using the system. And the other thing I would say is, before you come to CodeGuard, we are going to ask you for your FTP credentials. So make sure you have this on hand. Otherwise, we can't get in and back up your site.
Okay, now, I have, and I'm not talking about your free version here or talking about a free promo code or anything, but I have an unreasonably large client, 107,000 plus URLs in their website. One of those just absurd, enormous e-coms. How can CodeGuard help someone like that?
Well, a lot of that e-commerce data is probably stored in a database. The actual code may not be all that large. So CodeGuard is protecting the code. We can also protect a database. We have a development project underway to have very robust protection for databases. Right now, the way we would protect a database is we would have the content management system write the database out to a file, and then we back up that file. It's also possible that your large website has some sort of database backup routine on there. But what we found is that when websites get hacked, there's always some sort of attack on the code. It's extremely rare to find a hack where only the database is touched. It's almost always necessary to modify the code somehow in order to break into the database. So I suspect that site could be protected very well, certainly much better than leaving it exposed without any protection at all.
Okay. Interestingly, Frank Watson, otherwise known as Aussie Webmaster to the multitude of people out there listening, he's working with you guys, obviously, because he was on the Webmaster Radio chat room saying that he's off to Internet Week to pimp CodeGuard on your behalf. How many other webmasters out there, especially some of us in the old guard, have heard about what you guys are doing and have just sort of come to the forefront and said, yeah, that's good. I want to get out there and start talking about it. Are you getting a lot of support from our community?
Yes, although obviously we'd love to have more. It's very interesting when we, Jonathan and I both serve mostly role as evangelists within the company at this point. We have a full-time CTO and CEO, and what's really gratifying is that when you talk to anybody who's actually in the web community, it only takes about 5 minutes before the light goes off and it makes sense. And they're like, oh, yes, that would have protected me or saved me or helped one of my clients or I got hacked 3 times in the last month and I'm hitting myself because I haven't installed this yet. So, we're getting support. Obviously, we are grateful for anybody who wants to talk about us. And for Frank, I guess he's going to have free drinks for a long time. But
that'll save him a lot of money.
I'm going to jump in here really, really quickly with a question, because I know your guys' time is really valuable, and I want to make sure before we're done with that I get this question in. Obviously, a service like this that can monitor, that can tell us, you know, is there a problem? What is the problem? Isolate it for us, even back it up so that we can restore is fantastic. When that happens to one of your clients, obviously, we now know there is a problem. You are vulnerable. What do you do now to make sure that doesn't happen again, other than continue monitoring? But what do you generally end up finding as the biggest holes that people actually need to patch to stop this from happening?
So you know, I've shared notes with people at other big tech companies, and the number one source of hacking is unpatched content management systems like WordPress. Whenever you see the thing that says a new version is available, stop what you're doing and upgrade. Another major source of hacking is just bad hosting. You know, people who are on a bad hosting provider, often if someone's being hacked repeatedly and it's not the obsolete content management system, I would tell them, you know, try a different hosting provider. Go to someone who has a good reputation for security.
And I would, Jonathan, don't forget that actually a lot of this is also that your passwords have been stolen by some bot you don't know that's running on your machine. So go
That's a third thing, which is you got to check your own workstation that the bad guys aren't stealing the passwords right from your machine.
And how common is that a problem?
It's pretty common, although it's not as common as the unpatched WordPress. Unpatched WordPress is probably the number one reason sites get hacked.
Okay. I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. There's a dozen more questions I'd like to ask you guys, but we have a second segment coming up with a rather timely piece on personal privacy at Facebook. So, Jonas Stein, Jonathan Hochman. Gentlemen, thank you so much for spending time with us on Webcology. The product is called CodeGuard, and webmasters, go look at it. It's CodeGuard.com, CodeGuard.com. When you get there, if you're listening to the show right now, use Webcology as your key. You'll get a limited free version. Start playing with this product. Save yourself a whole bunch of time, and you know, maybe save your website from either hackers or from yourself. Jonathan and Jonah, gentlemen, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Friends, we have to take a break here on Webcology. We're going to be coming back in just about 2.5 minutes with Shelley Palmer, host of NBC Universal's weekly show, Live Digital, and also Fox 5, WNYW-TV's tech expert. We're going to be talking Facebook privacy and photo recognition. But before we do that, I'm afraid we've got to pay some bills. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davis from Beanstalk SEO. This is Webcology on WebmasterRadio.fm. Stay tuned. Back after these messages.
Sit tight and don't move. Webcology. We'll be back after this short break.
2, 1, boost to ignition.
Ascend into new heights of ranking and revenue with a search engine friendly online shopping cart that's ready for liftoff. Introducing Ascender Cart. Ascender Cart optimizes your shopping cart with easy-to-use SEO tools that will help build keywords, titles, and tags for top search engine rankings. Get all of the advantages of having a shopping cart on your site and monitor your progress with regular reports in just a click. Prepare to launch your shopping cart to the top of the search engines with Ascender Cart. Learn more about what Ascender Cart can do for you at AscenderCart.com. AscenderCart.com.
As you know, being an expert at
What did she say?
Requires lots of practice and a great tool. Think you could use some help with
Whoa!
You're not alone. Hundreds have used our tool to take their performance to the next level.
The language!
Of course, we're talking about managing Facebook ads on Acquisio.
Oh.
Buy, track, manage, optimize, and report on media across all major ad networks. Visit Acquisio.com to get a demo today. Acquisio. Search, social, display, one platform.
On the road, on the boat, working out, or up in the air. Now you can listen to WebmasterRadio.fm on the go from anywhere. Look for WebmasterRadio.fm on TuneIn.
Available for download on your iPhone, iPad, BlackBerry, Android, Palm, Samsung, and Windows Phone, as well as Google TV, Yahoo TV, and Roku. Tune in to WebmasterRadio.fm on the go from anywhere by downloading TuneIn right now. WebmasterRadio.fm. We really are everywhere.
WebmasterRadio.fm presents Purse Strings. Marketing to women expert Maria Retan will untie the purse strings and give you the inside track on today's woman, how to capture her attention, grow her loyalty, and create such enthusiasm about your company or product that she spreads the word with her friends and family. Purse Strings with Maria Retan, Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, or on demand anytime inside the advertising channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Commercials off. Now back to Webcology, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
Here are the hosts, Jim Hedger and Dave Davies.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Webcology here on WebmasterRadio.fm. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Dave Davies from Beanstalk SEO. And we're joined by Shelley Palmer, host of NBC Universal's weekly show Live Digital and also Fox 5, WNYW-TV's tech expert, Shelley Palmer. Welcome to Webcology.
Hey, how are you?
We're excellent today. Keeping a low profile. Worried about having my face recognized and tagged everywhere I go.
Yeah, I bet.
You've been taking a stand around facial recognition at Facebook. Just if you could explain to our listeners really quickly what's going on.
Well, in the shortest possible way, the easiest way to describe it is there's enough technology out there where it's becoming something that you should do if you can. You know, there's a lot of technologies that have been around for a while where they're parlor tricks, they stay parlor tricks for a long time, and then ultimately they become easy enough to become paradigm shifts. And facial recognition is very close to making the leap from a parlor trick to a paradigm shift. And because of that, an awful lot of companies, Facebook included, are thinking, hey, this would be a really nice feature and possibly an excellent benefit depending on what side of the river you're standing on. And so, yeah, you know, it's coming, and it's coming soon. And there are some people who think it's a really good idea, and there's some people who think not so much.
Well, with facial recognition, what can Facebook do to, do harm its members? What potential harm is there for a Facebook member with that Facebook?
From my perspective, very little. But there are those. I don't have a stand on it one way or the other. I mean, I believe personally, there's absolutely no reasonable expectation of privacy in the 21st century, and anyone who thinks that there is probably sadly mistaken. Certainly here in New York, Representative Anthony Weiner has a completely new understanding of the power of social media and the lack of privacy therein. However, there are some people who will say, and this is me, don't shoot the messenger, because I'm not, now it's just hypothetically talking, that you can be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and that could be bad for you. Now, what does that mean? Right now, if I'm at a party, and my friend is tagged, and I'm in the photo, or a friend shoots a picture of me without asking, because I'm at a party, ask Michael Phelps how good that feels when you're taking a bong hit, and you're at somebody else's party, and someone decides you're an Olympic athlete, and they need to shoot a picture of it, and then tag you on Facebook. Now, that probably would have been recognized because it's Michael Phelps, even if he wasn't tagged in the photo in any way. But truthfully, if you have an auto-tagging feature, and, you know, Facebook etiquette nowadays kind of says before you tag someone, you send them a little Facebook message and say, hey, I have this cool shot of you, you know, can I tag you in it? Because that's what, like, nice people do, unless you're super close friends. That's what you do with acquaintances, since Facebook friends lists have exceeded the natural number of people that it should. I mean, there are some people with 500 and 700 Facebook friends. I have close to 5,000. Trust me, I don't know them all. I mean, I know them all personally. For handshake purposes, but I don't know them all to tag them without asking. Probably know 300-400 people to tag them without asking, as does everybody else. And so this enabled would, I think, you know, set you up for the classic, you're supposed to be at choir practice and you're at the bowling alley. And as many divorce lawyers would like to tell you, don't worry about it, they'll find it.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I have a number of friends who are lawyers, and Facebook is a prime research resource for them. Now, as I understand it, the facial recognition technology Facebook is going to be introducing will prompt a user to tag their friend. We've recognized your buddy Joe Blow in this photo, and we suggest you tag him. So there'll still be a human action necessary to make that tag. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely. Here's I don't have any personal issue with it at all. I'm just saying that from the standpoint of the privacy advocates, they're up in arms and should be in their own minds, because this is an automated process that can quickly be used for good and quickly be used for not so good. Honestly, that's,
A couple of years ago, when it was suggested that Facebook didn't have this technology, didn't Mark Zuckerberg try to assure his users they would never introduce this?
Yeah, well, you know, my mom and your mom both told us never say never, so we're just going to give him a free pass on that one. Steve Jobs says I'm never going to have Flash on my Apple iPhone or iPod Touch, or my iPad. I think that really does mean never, but I'm not sure that Mark Zuckerberg has that level of foresight. Look, you know what? The issue with facial recognition, whether Facebook enacts it or not, whether you decide to buy a camera that'll do it for you or not, I mean, how cool is that? You take a picture of your family members and it gets auto-tagged. You take a picture of your friends on your weekend outing or your beach outing and everybody gets automatically tagged and gets uploaded to Facebook. I mean, that's just a huge convenience. And for every benefit to society the technology gives us, there's somebody who's going to figure out a way to do something untoward with it. I always personally believe that the progress is worth the risk and that we as a society have to evolve to understand and learn how to, you know, strategically deal with the technology that is constantly changing and constantly growing and always ahead of us. No matter what, no matter how tech savvy you think you are, there's always something coming out today you didn't know about yesterday. So you have to get over that. And as a society, this becomes a real issue. Not very many people give lip service to the power of social media, to the power of Twitter. But, I mean, how does Anthony Weiner not think YFrog.com is a public publishing platform, or that Twitter is not a public publishing platform? I mean, what was going through his mind? And the answer is, it's so well woven into the fabric of our lives. My favorite way to describe this is, did Tiger Woods, when he left that fateful voicemail message, did he really understand he was making a digital audio recording that was going to be stored in a remote location, that he was giving up rights to the work, that it was going to be file shared on BitTorrent like a hit song that nobody wanted to pay for? Of course not. He thought he was leaving a voicemail. If he was digitally literate, he would have understood that he was leaving a digital audio recording and all the things that go along with it, but that's not the way this stuff is ever presented to us. You don't know how much RAM or ROM is in an iPhone unless you're a super dweeb. You don't know what the screen resolution is. You know it's a Retina display, but you know, and that's assuming you're paying attention to the commercials. No, all you know is that it has all these wonderful benefits. So in a benefits-oriented society, that where they try to weave new, interesting technology into our lives, it's not a wonder that people get surprised when it doesn't quite go the way it's supposed to. If you go to my website, ShellyPalmer.com, you get a pretty good understanding of my view of the world, which is that we need everyone to be more digitally literate all the time. In fact, I have a new book out called Overcoming the Digital Divide. It literally came out 2 weeks ago on Amazon. And the subtitle of the book is How to Use Social Media and Digital Tools to Reinvent Yourself in Your Career. But for people who are already tech savvy, it just gives labels to things that need labels. And we need to be keeping conscious of. Like I said, I don't see anything wrong with the way Facebook is going to enable facial recognition. I think it's awesome. But you can't be naive enough to think that it's not going to be exploited by people who spend their time thinking about ways to exploit stuff. And when it happens, we should not be surprised.
You know, the funny thing is, this is a group of super tech dweebs, the audience that you're speaking to today on Webmaster Radio, and we often screw up. We forget how pervasive the technology is, how overarching digital technology can be. Why is it that there seems to be this, I mean, 15, 20 years after the introduction of the commercial internet, there's still this major disconnect? We think it's another world still. Any ideas? I do actually
have a lot of thoughts on the subject. I'm not an anthropologist. I don't even pretend to know a lot about anthropology. But I do know that it is human nature to become quite complacent. If you look at reality television, for the first couple seconds, they know the cameras are there, but then they don't. And you actually get a fairly remarkable glimpse into the way people actually are. On my site, there's an interesting article, and I hate to say that about my own work, that's terribly egotistical. I apologize for that immediately. There's an article I wrote you may find interesting, I'll put it that way, called Metamerica, Evolving the Governance of a Digital Democracy. And it kind of has a thesis that says the metadata that describes us, our purchase decisions, our viewing habits, our credit scores, all the things that we have digitally stored about us that describe us, the metadata that describes us, or the meta-America that describes America, is more valuable and more vulnerable. I mean, Facebook, not to put too fine a point on it, I grew up in a town that had a government, in a county that had a government, in a state that had a government, in a country that had a government. Facebook has over 600 million registered profiles, and they don't have a customer service number. Forget about a government. So there's a virtual world that exists out there we take for granted because we think we are the masters of it, and we are tech dweebs. You know, we are the technorati. And so we think we have the Death Star, and somehow we always personalize this. I've got this great capability, and no one but me has it. It's like, but you and I both know that technical prowess and these kinds of technical achievements are fleeting. You're the best in the world at what you do in technology in that arms race for a day. And then the hacker on the other side of the table gets a leg up on you, and then you spend the day getting a leg up on him or her, and that's how this goes. We are just programmed to ignore the things that are non-emergent. And honestly, if a gunshot went off, everybody would duck under the table. But if I say to you that the world is warming up and the ice caps are going to melt in 30 years, that's going to be bad, you're like, yeah, tell me about it. That's terrifying. So there's a whole bunch of humanness to us where we just don't pay attention to things, and we tend to, familiarity breeds boredom, and we become, and not contempt, and we can become sort of interestingly complacent. I see it happen over and over again. And by the way, I don't think this is going to stop. I got a question for you. How long could you maintain the hypervigilance required to not write anything in a text or email that you didn't want made public immediately? Could you go through your day shooting video for upload? Could you go through your day acting as if you were a star, like really a star, with a paparazzi waiting? God forbid you picked your nose. Someone would put a picture of it in the National Enquirer. How many days could you personally survive at that level of vigilance?
5 years thus far, but I try to be perfect.
Okay. Well, I think the average human being would not be able to hold that together for 5 years, and yet all of us are now publishers.
There's radical. The only answer to that is radical transparency. Just live way out in the open.
After all, can we? Is that something human beings do? I mean, what a great roundtable that would be with a bunch of actual anthropologists and sociologists and psychiatrists, which we're all going to need. And you sit back and you say, wow, I mean, I'm a publisher now as powerful as NBC, ABC, CBS, or Fox. When I put something on Facebook and someone finds it valuable, when I put something on Twitter and someone finds it valuable, they will retweet it and it will become viral. And I can overthrow the government of Egypt by getting a powerful idea and amplifying it. If that's who I am and I'm just an average person, do I need to act like the paparazzi are waiting for me? Is that what my new adopted behavior has to be? Because I got to tell you something. Most people would prefer not to live that way.
Indeed.
All right. I'm going to jump in. Just quick question. I just want to make sure to get in. And it sort of deals with, we'll talk about, put it in the context of the Facebook issue right now, but on a broader scope. There's outcry from privacy advocates about this specific technology. I agree with you, Shelley. I think that really, because of the way they're doing it, it's just making my life a little easier. I still have to verify it. I would have tagged them anyway. They're just making it easier for me to do that. So is it the actual feature itself that privacy advocates are having a problem about and that we get concerned about? Or is it this sudden realization that we knew facial recognition was out there, we knew that Facebook can collect data, but gee, now they're right out there about it, going, now even whether you tag or not, we know who that person is. Whether you choose to tag them or not, we know all of these connections that, you know, behind the scenes, maybe you don't, and we'll start drawing these connections and putting these pieces together that maybe you don't even want us to.
But that's exactly what's going to happen. And so if you look at visual search technology and what a SIF file looks like and the way they're using that at Georgia Tech and MIT and how you're taking two-dimensional objects and making them pattern recognized so you can fingerprint really easily. And you can also add some other technologies to that because that technology doesn't need to live in a vacuum. You can add OCR to that. You can add all kinds of other analysis tools where now not only do I know who you are, but I'm getting a really good idea of where you are and what you're doing and who you're doing it with because I just don't recognize you. I recognize everybody. Who in their right mind wants to sign up for that?
Well, apparently,
think about the size of the planet in Facebook, the virtual planet. Let's say Facebook really has, they say they have 600-700 million active profiles. Let's say that that's registered pages. Let's say there's only 300 million people who are really on it all the time. If I literally knew where they were, who they were with, and what they were doing all of the time, is that good for anybody? I'm asking the question. I don't actually think I'd use the technology that way, but it's a flip of a switch to use it that way. That's what the privacy, I mean, I'm speaking from that, I'm doing opposition prep. I'm speaking for a privacy advocate. That's, if I was a privacy advocate, how I would argue. If I'm a technologist saying this is progress, I would argue, wait a second, this is a better life through technology. This is an action I do anyway. It's a behavior I've exhibited. Facebook's number one thing that you do is you put pictures online and look at them. And the number one thing you do with a picture is tag your friends because it's a new kind of social currency. And this is just a tool that makes that easier. Shut up. That would be the other side of it. It's easy to argue both sides. Very easy. The problem is that at the end of the day, the creep factor is really high. David Pogue, who I think has been arrested recently and thrown out of the New York Times, which does not make him a bad guy, has a very funny line he put in his article about on a privacy article he wrote. He said, "Yes, Big Brother is watching, and I bet he's bored to tears."
Well, and Shelley, right? I'm afraid we have to leave it at that. We are dead out of time now. We've hit the top of the hour. So, Shelley Palmer, thank you so much for spending time with us on Webmaster Radio today. Friends, that's it. We're out of time. We did a whole hour again. I don't believe that we can do this every week, but somehow we managed to do it. Friends, you've been listening to Jim Hedger and Dave Davies on Webcology on webmasterradio.fm. Just got a note from Studio mentioning it is Search Engine Watch's 14th anniversary today. So everyone over at Search Engine Watch and Incisive Media, happy 14th. Next week, Dave and I are going to be appearing sort of kind of live. We're going to be recording live at SES Toronto Monday and Tuesday of next week. But, again, we're hard up against the top of the clock. We got to go. So thank you for listening. Have an excellent week. And, friends, we'll talk to you next week. Stay safe.